Rosh Hashanah is a day of telling little stories, little vignettes. Yesterday, our Torah reading was the story of Abraham and Sarah finding their yearnings for a child together fulfilled with the birth of Yitzchak. And the story of Hagar and Ishmael, how they get sent away, but ultimately he becomes the father of a great nation. In the Haftarah, we read the story of Chana, barren, pleading in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple at Shiloh, before Eli the Kohen recognizes that she's not drunk at all, but she's pouring out her heart. Today we read the story of the Akedah, the frightening, terrifying story of a father about to slaughter his own son. I want to tell you some stories about stories. It is said that when there was a great crisis for the Jewish people, the holy Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic movement, would go out to the woods, he would build a fire, he would recite a prayer, and he would sing a melody. And the tragedy that was about to befall the Jewish people was removed, and they were saved. When the Baal Shem Tov died, his disciples couldn't remember the melody. But they knew where to go in the forest, they knew how to build the fire, and they knew the prayer. And each time the tragedy was facing the Jewish people, the tragedy was averted. When his disciple died, the disciple after him would also feel the need to save the Jewish people before tragedy, but he didn't remember the prayer. So he would go out to the woods and he would build a fire in the same place. And the tragedy was averted. When he died, his disciple did not remember how to build the fire. But he knew where to go in the woods, and the tragedy was averted. When he died, his disciple did not know where to go in the woods. But he told the story, and the tragedy was averted. The telling of the story seems somehow to be able to bring us into a place where we can reenact what happened once. So the story is told that when the patriarch Abraham confronted God, he did so with a question that really was a charge. He said to him, Abraham said to the Holy One, Ribono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Shema chas v'chalil Yisrael chotim lefanecha, it may be that the people of Israel will one day sin, ve'ata osel lehem b'dor k'dor ha'mabul, and you will do to them what you did to the generation of the flood. Amalo, the son of the Universe, said to him, love, no. I will not. I will not bring about another flood to destroy the people. Amar lefanav, Abraham said to God, then Ribono shel Olam, give me a sign, b'ma eda, how will I know? How do I know that you will not do it? And so, Ribono shel Olam gave him the instructions regarding the bringing of korbanot, of bringing animal sacrifices. And Abraham came to understand that if they would bring these sacrifices, they would not be destroyed as a people. But still, Abraham confronted God and said, but what happens when the temple is no longer standing and the people will not be able to bring sacrifices? And the Kadosh Baruch Hu said to him, if they read from the Torah the portions of the commandment of the sacrifices, it will be as if they had brought the sacrifice, and I will forgive their sins. The telling of the story, the reading of the passage, has power. So I want to tell you where I was yesterday afternoon and what I did. And I wasn't alone. Because this was an extremely moving experience for me. Extremely moving. I announced that David Valensky and I will go to visit people who were not well enough to come to shul this year. And we'll do what we did the last 2 years. We'll go to their homes and we'll blow shofar for them. And there's a fellow from who's married to the woman who is the partner of the store, Dayenu, next to the JCC, who said that he heard about it last year, and he wanted to come with us. He's the shofar blower at Peninsula Sinai Temple. Owen Liebman, he came too. And his parents said, we're here from Toronto, so his father came too. And there was a fellow from shul who is new to our congregation, our community, lives all the way in the mission. He came to Ner Tamid. He's a new member for the High Holy Day, new member and so on. And he had no place to go. He said, he'll come too. And David Valensky wasn't alone. His mother Lillian was with him. And she said, I'll come too. And so this entourage, a little caravan, we went first to the Grossman's home, the two remaining of the four sisters that had all never married, but had lived together. And less than a week ago, Alice, at the age of 98 and a half, passed away. And she was she held up that little family. We went there to blow shofar because Dora now can't walk without help, and Molly wouldn't leave without her. And we came into the house and we saw that their faces brighten up with such light. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. They're visited frequently by Ilse Ahrens, comes by every Shabbat with a leaflet to get them feel included. But this was something for the house to be filled with people all of a sudden on Rosh Hashanah. And I'll tell you, hearing David Valensky blow the shofar here blows me away. I mean, it's no pun intended. I'm just so moved. But hearing him blow the shofar in the home of the Grossman sisters made this seem like silence. And they were so grateful. They were so appreciative. And from there, we went to the home of Ben Tarrant. Ben Tarrant is on the 12th floor of an apartment house near Lake Merced. He has come to Ner Tamid for over 30 years, never as a member. He bought a ticket. And when I first came here, this is my fifth, matter of fact, in 2 months, it'll be 6 years since I'm here at Ner Tamid. I met Ben Tarrant saying good yontif to him at High Holidays. And he said, Rabbi, I'm not a member. As if he's not a member, he doesn't deserve a handshake from the rabbi. I said, why aren't you? He says, I've been coming for 30 years, but I'm not a member. I said, why aren't you a member? He says, because nobody asked me. I said, I'm asking you. He says, okay, I'll be a member. That's all it took. And Ben's wife has Alzheimer's, had Alzheimer's. She was at the Jewish home. He went 7 days a week there. And after he joined, he only went 6 days a week because every Shabbat he came here. And when his wife Ethel passed away, he came to the minyan to say Kaddish. And for 2 years, he virtually never missed a Thursday morning. Never. But Ben is on in years. Walking wasn't easy and he fell and broke four ribs. He was in the hospital after breaking four ribs. So he couldn't come to shul. So we went up to the 12th floor. We all crowded in a little elevator. You know, those Lake Merced apartments. The elevators are small. We all crowded in the elevator. Went up to the 12th floor. On the way up, His fellow sees we're pressing the button. He says, where are you going? Going to see Ben Tarrant. He says, he's my neighbor, and I'm Jewish. He says, this is where, you know, the chauffeur. Now he says, tell you want to hear the chauffeur? He says, well, all right, I'll hear the chauffeur. But he didn't want to come into the apartment. He heard the chauffeur from outside. And we came in and we blew the chauffeur for Ben. Ben never in his life had missed hearing the chauffeur for Rosh Hashanah. This is the first time he would have missed it. But he didn't. And then we went to Hai and Helen Agin's house. Helen couldn't get out of bed. She couldn't get out of bed. But she had her hair done because she had a hairdresser come in to make her look beautiful. And she looked beautiful. Beautiful. And we, all of us, stood in the bedroom and we sounded the shofar for Helen Agin. There were tears in her eyes. It was marvelous. It was beautiful. And you know, she's such a bright woman. She understands the doctoral reading. She understands. She's spoken from this pulpit many times. She feels so empty not being in shul. All of a sudden, the shul came to her. And then our last stop was the home of Herb Hamrol. Herb Hamrol is 104 and a half years old. 104 and a half. And on the walls of his little apartment is the framed story that appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle when he turned 100 and Andronikos made a little party because he worked there. He still works there. He goes in every Wednesday. He's the greeter. Every Wednesday. And Herb came to shul, sat in the first row near Harold every year. His younger brother, Max, sitting over there. And there was Herb, but not this year. And at 104 years old, living alone, we were all exhausted by that time, schlepping around. Everybody sat down. Herb stood the whole time. And he made the bracha of hearing the sound of the shofar. And David Volansky and Owen Liebman both blew the shofar for him. And there were tears in his eyes. And then he said, I wasn't at my brother's funeral. And so I didn't have the opportunity to say Kaddish. And I said to him, you know, there are enough people here for you to say Kaddish. And he said Kaddish for his brother. The first time. A man whom he had known for 99 and a half years. And he said Kaddish. We called a number of other people and sounded the shofar to them on the telephone because for one reason or another it didn't work out. Ruth Goldstein's husband was sleeping and Siggy Isaac's his wife was being wrapped in bandages and so on. But we got a regards from everyone. Everyone wanted us to wish everybody a good year, including Cantor Freya, by the way, who was home with his wife, Miriam. And you know, I said, too bad we don't have the chazan with us to sing the davening for you. He says, Rabbi, I don't need it. I have my records. His own voice, when he was a cantor, was recorded. He made now on CDs. So he listened to himself daven for Rosh Hashanah. I'm telling you, these experiences were beautiful. By that time, it was about 6 o'clock at night. And we went to the bridge over the, over in Lake Merced, there's this bridge that, David Volansky knows where it is. And we took we had actually matzah sticks from the Liebman table. So we took the matzah sticks and we did tashlich. And we threw these little pieces of, unleavened bread with these little matzah sticks. And ducks started to come up. It's unbelievable. It was like the NRA would have been in Gan Eden if they would have seen so many ducks at once. All of a sudden, all the ducks started to come and we kept pouring out this. It was unbelievable. It was a phenomenal feeling. But you know, I didn't feel that I had a lot of sins to throw anymore because I felt that the mitzvahs of going to these people negated all of the things that I did wrong in the past year. It was so wonderful. It was so wonderful. You weren't with me. You weren't with David and his mother and Owen and Benson but I'm telling you the story because I want you to have been there through the story. So now I'm going to tell you another story. It's another midrash that deals with the Akedah, with the binding of Isaac. I love hearing Michelle's voice and reading the Torah. But to read that portion is even more powerful. The problem is, it went by too quickly. Too quickly. The Akedah is a story of a man who has waited 99 years for a son. His son Isaac is born. His wife Sarah must have been in seventh heaven. And all of a sudden, he has a vision. God says, take this child, take this boy, whom you love, the only one of his mother, and bring him up to the mountain, Va'alehu, and turn him into an olah, into a burnt offering. And the next morning, Avram gets up, takes his son, he takes some servants, and he starts going to him. Har Moriah, to Mount Moriah, to offer his son up as a sacrifice. And he doesn't say a word. Doesn't say a word. So the Midrash begins to talk for Avraham. One Midrash says this. This is from the Tanchuma. The Midrash says, Kidmu echad baderech v'nidmelo b'dmut zakein. Someone approached him and took the form of an old man. So Avram sees an old man as he's going on the way to sacrifice his son. The old man says to Avram, where are you going? I'm going to daven. I'm going to pray. Wait a second. If a person is going to pray, what does he need to hold a torch with fire, have a knife in his hand, and carrying sticks of wood on his back? Amalo, Avram says to the old man, Shemana Shaya Yom or Yomayim, Vinishchat Vinefa Vinochal. It might be delayed in our prayers a day or two, and so it'll be necessary to slaughter and cook and roast. And eat. Amalo Zakein. Amalo, he said to him, Zakein, you old man, Lo Shama Yiti Keshamalacha Kodesh Baruch Hu Kachet Bincha. Do you think I wasn't there when the Almighty said to you, take your son? I was there. You can't fool me. And Avram said, Amanat Kein. Just for this, which seems to imply that I have no choice. It's not up to me. As if I was born just to do this. Amalo, the other person says to him, Lemachar Yomalecha, tomorrow God will say to you, Shofek Damata, you're a murderer. Because you spilled the blood of this boy. Amalo Amanat came. Abraham said, what can I do about it? I'm powerless. I'm not finished, but I'm going to tell you another midrash and you'll see the contrary. This midrash comes from the Talmud. And it's quoted by Rashi, the great medieval commentary. Rashi says, Abraham wasn't silent. Rabbi Abba, one of the great Talmudic sages, says that there was a debate between Abraham and God at that moment. Amalo Avraham, Abraham said to God, Efaresh lefanecha et sichati. I have a complaint against you, God. Etmol, yesterday, you told me, in Isaac will be your seed called by your name. In other words, it is through Isaac that I'll have my progeny. You promised me that my descendants will be like this, as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the grains of sand along the shore. And then when Isaac was born, you said, it is through him that my seed will be named. And now you're telling me, Kachnai bincha, take your son and bring him as a sacrifice. God waits until after the moment when his hand is stayed by the angel and says, Lo amati lecha shechtu. I didn't tell you to slaughter him, Ela ha'alehu. I told you to bring him up to the mountain. Now that you've brought him up, bring him down again. These two midrashim, these two versions of the story, are in total contradiction to each other. In one, Abraham feels powerless. He believes that he's about to slaughter his son. The son he's been waiting for, and he does absolutely nothing about it. He does not say a word. He doesn't argue at all. In the other, he is demanding a response from God. You promised me that I'll have a progeny, and look what you're doing, my only son, and you're going to have me slaughter him. So Nechama Leibovich goes back to the first story, and she says, do you know what this is about? The old man that accosted Abraham, that it gets him into this debate, is really himself. In other words, we live in a constant struggle with ourselves. On the one hand, we feel we have to do what we're told to do. This is what my parents said, this is what my rabbi said, this is what my teacher said, this is what God said, this is what society says. Who am I to challenge it? Who am I to change it? Who am I to make it different? On the other hand, there's a part of us who says, I have a mind of my own. I'm not a dummy. I'm not stupid. I'm capable of seeing what is right for myself. And so the same Abraham challenges God and says, I can't accept what you're telling me. And then goes back and says, but who am I to argue? And then goes back and says, this isn't right. And then goes back and say, but I'm powerless. And then goes back and says, but it's my life. I have a decision to make. And then along comes the Midrash that says, what is the meaning of Yisrael? Israel? One who argues with God. One who struggles with God. One who fights with God. Rav Kook said, the first chief rabbi of the state of Israel, Rav Kook said, it is through the struggle that we find God, not through complacency. It is not simply by taking orders that we find God. And it is not by being rebellious that we find God. We find God in the struggle. In other words, the lesson for us from this story is that when inside we feel torn apart, when we're not sure what to do in any given situation, that's where we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be in the debate with ourselves. The old man who confronts the old man is the same man. It's us arguing and debating, what is right? What should I do? The story is told of the great Hasidic master who turned to his students and said, you're on your way back home from shul on a Shabbat. And all of a sudden you look down and you see there is a pile of money, gold coins. What do? Do you take it or do you leave it? And his first and bright student says, Rabbi, what kind of a question is this? It's Shabbos. Of course I don't touch the money. I leave it there. Rabbi says, fool. Do you realize what you could do with all that money? All the good you can do? One avera, one transgression, you pick up money on Shabbos, but then with those gold coins, you can help poor people a lot. You can do whatever you possibly can think is a great mitzvah. Why would you let it go? And the disciple pulls back in embarrassment. He turns to another one, he says, what would you do? It's Shabbos, the money is on the ground, you're passing by, you're the only one there, what would you do? And he says, well, I would pick it up because it's only one avera. And I'm thinking of all the good I can do. He says, good you can do. You think it's a simple transgression for you to take money on the Shabbat? The next thing you want to do is spend the money on Shabbat. And the next thing you want to do is earn money on Shabbat. And before you know it, you'll be a nothing. You wouldn't belong anymore. You'll be gone from the Jewish people. This is the commandment that comes from God. How can you say that you're going to take the money on Shabbos? And the student pulls away. He turns to a third and he says, and what would you do? And the disciple says, Rabbi, I don't know what I would do. I would be standing in front of that money debating with myself. Should I take it or not? But until I am faced with such a real situation, I don't know what I would choose. And the Rabbi said, that's the right answer. We don't know what we're going to do. In our lives, we're given commandments, not as severe as Abraham was given, but we're given commandments from our society, from our families, from our God. We're tempted to say, this is it, I have no choice. But then we also realize, I have to decide. And it's in the struggle that I find God. And one last comment. The comment is God's response to Abraham when he argues. He says to him, and if you, Michelle knows the Torah portion, so does Svi very well. God says to Abraham, I didn't tell you to slaughter your son. I told you halehu, raise him up, bring him up. And Rav Kook added, that is our job in life. To raise things up. To make holy what is not yet holy. Rav Kook said, there is no such thing as something unholy. There is only the not yet holy. Only the not yet holy. As we go through our lives and we confront different situations and different choices, let's not start with the situation that one is right and one is wrong. Let's rather approach it with, how can I make it better? How do I make my life better? How do I make the lives of people around me better? Ha'alehu, God said to Abraham, don't slaughter. Raise him up.